Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
We have a situation.
That we do. Welcome to Wednesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the Pride of Chicago, Danny Burke, and you. Time for you to join us if you want to tap the line with Shillingbridge Cork and Tap House. 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. What's on the menu today? Plenty of thoughts on Diaco, his comments, his post-practice session that's just dominated football and Nebraska and Nebraska fans the last 16 to 20 hours with his comments. For time purposes, we're only a two-hour show. It's been edited down, and you'll hear from Coach Diaco some thoughts from me on what he's saying, some thoughts from me on what Coach Banker responded with. We were able to get in contact briefly with Coach Banker today, not interested in doing an interview with the radio. And I get that. There's been enough blowback between his comments to Sip and Sammy that I get that. So that door is always open for him to us. Door's open for you. You want to find us on Twitter at Hail Varsity at Schmidt underscore radio. And coming up, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment, 30 minutes out. Mike Shewhart, Shuey, going to be with us. We'll talk some Tiger. We'll talk some golf. And in hour two, Brad Edwards, get his thoughts on the SEC and get his take on the Big 12 and where the Big 10 is at with Wisconsin being their only hope for a playoff participant. And room for you in the latter part of the 5 o'clock hour around 520. 466-377-6800-825-5865. So you've maybe read some of the comments. You've heard some of the comments. You've digested it. And my takeaways, a couple of them. One, there needs to be an intervention. When I think of interventions, I think of, I forget what season it is in The Sopranos, but eventually they get Christopher into rehab. And that's the funniest intervention. While interventions are not good or funny, that scene was a classic piece of dark humor where there was a fight that broke out during the intervention. And Christopher in The Sopranos eventually went to rehab. And Tony made him do that. It's pretty good. There needs to be an intervention. You have incredible people down at the University of Nebraska. You have communication experts at the University of Nebraska. You need to take their help if you're Nebraska's defensive coordinator. You need guidance from them to stop yourself. I know you don't like talking. You're not comfortable talking. You don't know when to stop talking. Get it. Not for everybody. Totally understand it. But take some help. The old Jerry Maguire, help me help you. That needs to happen because you go off and there's too much talking going on out of different sides of your mouth when it comes to explaining things. And you don't want to throw players under the bus. You don't want to air the family's dirty laundry. And you want to be honest, and when things aren't going well, and I'm paraphrasing one of the quotes you'll hear, one of the comments you'll hear, it's tough to do. So my intervention is this. Is the defense performing well? No. Is it consistent? No. Is it awful? Not all the time. Is it great or greatness? No. There's a lot of no's in there. The yes is this. I'm the defensive coordinator. We are in a scheme change, and that is real. We are not getting a pass rush. We are not stopping the run. And our tackling is hit or miss. We have some young guys. We've had some injuries. Those are all facts, excuses, however you want to interpret them. You, the football fan, fine. We are trying to get better. It's on me that we're not. It's not on the offense scoring 19 a game in Big Ten play. It's not on the offense putting us in god-awful sudden change situations. It's not on the offense giving opposing offenses short fields with turnovers. It's not on the offense that have put together some pick six highlight packages for the NFL draft. It's not on the offense for 2 yards a carry or worse, whatever percentage of the time Nebraska tries to run the football now. Look, you can play the blame game and it's totally there. But either you believe or you don't in winning and losing as a team. Because there are things that slip out in commentary that make you wonder if you're a fan out there listening. And you've got an us versus them type setup going on. Here's Bob. He's the new guy. You whacked Banker. Defense wasn't awesome, but it wasn't awful a year ago in year two under Banker. You bring this new guy in, and this all stems from regret, buyer's remorse. Harvey made a decision. Sean made a decision. The decision was to whack Bo. They jumped at the chance to get Riley, his staff, and move these guys out here. After the fact, they're like, this isn't working. And this is year one where they're going, eh. Palm the forehead. So the constant message since 2015 has been, give us more time, look at the recruiting. You're almost there. And then there's been change to allow time. Maybe change has been made for the best interest of the football program and team when it comes to guys who've been let go of their positions and new hires have been made. Maybe that's a true feel by the people in charge. But you bring in Devaney, you have gone through 2 D-line coaches, Perella's now here, and I think he's fine. You bring Diaco in, you had constant change. And you're always taking a step or two back with this change. Now you're in year 3. And nobody thought it was going to get this ugly this fast based on the decision you made back at the end of 2014. And it's been a comedy of errors. Not only with what has been performing on the field, but the constant change off of the field. And the last month and a half has been more about off the field, commentary, recruiting, and then lack of interest because of what's been performed on the field. And Nebraska football is a mess. And every Tuesday night or post-game when the defense doesn't pitch a shutout, it's a bigger mess and there's a bigger hole dug by your coordinator when he gets in front of a microphone. Gag order time. Sorry. Do him and everyone else a favor. Just shut it down. Because this team is now going into Minnesota, Penn State, then there's Iowa, and no one cares. You're just waiting on what, if anything, happens Saturday after Iowa. Because you're ready for something new. Bob Diaco is playing the blame game, and that's a bad look. Why is he playing the blame game? Because his career right now is this. Ballyhooed coordinator at Notre Dame. Notre Dame's kicking butt and taking names now without him. So some of that shine is gone from 2012. Didn't last, didn't work out. Wasn't his deal at UConn. To be fair, sorry, I'm not signing up to go coach UConn. As bad as I want to be a head coach, I'm not doing that. Gutsy decision. Didn't work out. Gets brought into Nebraska and has his own style, his own setup. And now he's in the thick of it. Up to his elbows in what Nebraska football wants and needs. And he's a guy that is like, man, what? how do I explain this? I know I'm good at what I do. I believe I'm good at what I do. And this stop will not end well. The previous stop I was let go from a career standpoint, what are my options here? Beg to be brought back because I don't have enough time with this scheme shift? Beg because I don't have enough time to be brought back because I don't have the right puzzle pieces? Beg to be brought back because the previous guy, hell, I've had to unscrew up all the screwing up he did for 2 years. Or a year, excuse me, with the rugby tackling. That's what you're saying without saying it, without throwing players under the bus, without airing the family's dirty laundry, and with being honest. So if I'm Bob Diaco, I just shut her down and say, I'm not talking. Here's a statement. Thanks for coming. Peace out. Do yourself a favor. And if I'm Bob Diaco, look, man, I'm probably really frustrated at this situation. You wanted to do well. There's been some steps forward. There's been some steps back. And the reality is, in his defense, he's had to carry an offense that should be way better. And when he took this job, he probably thought this offense will be way better and I'll be able to get by this first year. That's not been the case. In Nebraska, if hindsight's 20/20, you probably stick with Banker another year because at least their defense was tackling better and statistically speaking, and I know we can get to Iowa and I know we can get to Tennessee in a minute with what they did to Nebraska. But you had a better defense a year ago, and you're going to have a worse defense because of scheme change. I get that. But you're just dancing around the issues. And instead of talking about accountability, you're deflecting and blaming. And that's the one thing you don't do. As true as things may be, you do not point the finger within the coaching fraternity at previous issues. Or you don't go public with it. It may be true, it may be well understood, but it looks extremely weak. And you're better than that. You would think. A professional that's been everywhere he's been, and the coaches he's coached under, you don't throw another guy under the bus. And let's ask you this. Who do you believe? What do you believe? Do you believe, as screwed up as things are right now from a communication standpoint and an organizational standpoint pre-Moose, that the administration didn't mandate safe tackling? I-Corst has been all about student-athlete experience, and one of those experiences you pray for is not having to go sit in whatever the concussion protocol is now. So the rugby tackling was suggested. Was it suggested by Billy Devaney because he came from the NFL, because it's an NFL style of tackling? Maybe he'll get guys ready to be better pros. I could see it. And if it works, I don't care what they do. Just make the tackles. But it's a stretch for me to believe that you come in and it is so woefully awful that it has sent you back to step one, day one, when you're trying to learn algebra. The way he teaches, in my estimation, the process is this. Let's get A down before we get to B to see it's linear. And if they're working that much time on tackling, then the install's been delayed. They can't do whatever they want. They're afraid to ask guys to do certain things. It screws everything up because, for the lack of better explanation, you can't get your name right on the homework sheet. Got to get your name right before you start doing the work. Tackling is that. And to make it the tackling so poor, so brutal, no. The statistics say, and you can watch film a year ago, that what they were doing tackling-wise was good for the most part, and it won Nebraska a lot of games on their way to getting 9. Because the defense shut out some bad teams in the second half when they, guess what? The offense was sputtering. That's what you have right now. You have blame game going on, and what do you believe? You believe that there was a mandate? No. I believe there was probably a suggestion, and Riley said sure. And they waited till 2016 to implement it. And to go and say, look, the reason there's all these issues and the reason our defense is so bad is because the guy before me screwed things up. It probably wasn't perfect. There were issues with transition and scheme and fit and understanding. but just be accountable and keep your message constant. That it's bad, it'll get better, we're working on it. And the fear of that hourglass running empty is dominating him right now. Because what happens after Iowa, if there's a change? And he's putting it out there. So, with Bob Diaco, cut four. This is him being real. And to me, it's kind of airing a little bit of the family dirty laundry here.
And the last drive's evidence of it. So, as I said, you mentioned the run. You asked about the run, you know, and you're looking for that play. And then lo and behold, boom, Marcus picks the ball off and returns it for a touchdown for the go-ahead points. And you got the ball down there halfway through the fourth quarter, and you're going to go ahead by two scores. No, you're not. Okay. So now at that point that they take possession, so rather than going ahead by two scores, they take possession. At that point, they were 0 for 10 on third down. At that point, they had 0% success on third down, 0%. But then they had a third down and 9, and by an inch and a half converted it on a brand new player who tries hard and we love, and he's going to be a darn good player here. And he played good in the game, just on that one down. So they happen to be 1 of 11 on third down. And that one third down kept the drive alive, and they scored the tying points. I mean, it's just, it's tight.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. We are welcoming in Brandon Vogel, HailVarsity.com and magazine at Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. Vogues, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you, Chris?
I'm all right, man. I'm ready for a Diaco intervention, and I'm not down with the blame game. Remember that scene in Sopranos where where Tony and Uncle Polly and Sil and everybody jumped in and did the old intervention? It was a masterful piece of dark comedy.
I do remember that. There's the Christopher section of that particular story was one of the sadder, I guess, parts of the Sopranos overall theme. So I try not to go back to it too often, but that was one of the better parts.
Right, and eventually he didn't work out. Yeah. But the point is they tried. And right. with Diaco here, and I want your thoughts here with Banker's response comments, Diaco's comments, and I'm just annoyed is the best way to put it. I'm annoyed that you blame the previous regime because that's just not what made guys do, keeping with Sopranos theme, doing the coaching fraternity. You don't say it. You don't say it publicly. You deal with it. And right now, it's just been this constant cycle since the hiring of Riley, trying to find ways to extend time, keep the fan base patient, and let it happen in a normal, reasonable window in a state where if you get rid of a 9-win guy, you better bring in a 10-win guy.
Yeah, there were moments reading back those comments last night after practice where I was certainly cringing because you knew how they were going to play and you knew they were going to be read as excuses. But I think overall, and maybe my outlooks on this is a little bit different, I kind of immediately went to like, well, what parts of this are true and how true are they? And I guess the question is how willing are fans and people who can consume Husker football on a day-to-day basis sort of willing to accept those as legitimate reasons? I mean, what if the tackling was that bad? You know, I understand the point of view of, well, if it is, you can't change. You can't come out and say it, and it's your job to fix it. But that brings up to me sort of, well, how interested are we in what's actually going on there? You know, it's weird stuff. Diaco, with the way that he talks, kind of takes you to some weird places. But I honestly was kind of interested in hearing that point of view, because with enough time, I do still think that his defense works here. Based on his track record, there's not a lot of reason to think that it wouldn't. But it looks more than anything to me like a sort of the timeline for Diaco's improvement at Nebraska and the timeline for Mike Riley's improvement in Nebraska aren't going to match up, unfortunately.
That's just it. And that's the reality.
Yeah.
You took a job thinking you'd have more time. You may not have more time. Please don't exile me to football Siberia as a head coach or a coordinator. I think he's worried about that. I honestly think he's freaking out about that from a career standpoint, because Notre Dame's been successful without him. UConn didn't work out. You're here in Nebraska. And I will grant you that there is some gray area between excuse and reality. Absolutely. When you're trying to make a shift. But I don't believe their tackling was awful last year. I think they got crushed on some big plays, and I think they got set up for failure a lot by the offense's ineptness, by the injuries that are a reality. And they just got mauled by Iowa at season's end. They got out-athleted by Tennessee. So to me, it wasn't the defense got them from a 6 or 7 win team last year to that 9 win number, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't think the tackling was awful last year either. I think what Diaco was trying to say, and admittedly you have to do a lot of sifting and sorting to get there, was that, and this is the part where it just opens back up into interpretation again, that whatever he saw in terms of tackling, he didn't think it was going to, the players weren't playing with enough confidence, or however you want to put it, to play in a way that was going to work with what he hoped to install at Nebraska over this season and the seasons to come. So I don't think it was necessarily a shot at what Banker had done or even where that came from. It was just kind of an acknowledgement of here's a problem I saw when I showed up that I knew it was going to take some time to fix, but I felt like we had to fix it. That was kind of my overall takeaway from that whole part of it. Now, when you sort of invoke a little bit of hearsay, which is a risky thing on his part, this wasn't coming from the coaching staff. It came from higher than them. Well, that kind of brings you back to, I think, the overall struggle at Nebraska right now is that there still doesn't seem to be a top-down vision. And when I say top-down for football, I mean head coach down, because that's the way I think it should be. That's the way that works most places. And I don't know that they have that right now.
Don't know either. And you got a new boss in charge evaluating and observing. What are your thoughts here? If a change is made and Frost is in love with Florida or stays at Central Florida, are we in agreement that proven former champion is kind of a must plan A1 here?
I think proven certainly is, based on what I've heard and was able to ask Moose about. That's certainly a big thing for him. You know, there's a lot more risk when you have to go the up and comer route. That said, there aren't a ton of proven coaches ever available in any given year. So that's sort of your challenge. So I guess it really comes down to a definition of what Moose might consider proven. We know that Scott Frost apparently is in that category. So you think you'd have to put somebody like Matt Campbell, who has as many Power Five or has as many FBS coaching years under his belt. Well, more when you factor in his time previously, into that group. Still a young guy, though. So I do think that's important. Again, you look at the candidate pool, though, and there's not a lot of no-brainers out there. So if Moose decides to go that route, he's definitely going to earn his money early here at Nebraska.
Let's talk candidate pool. What does Les Miles do for you?
I would be cautiously optimistic if he were to be a candidate in Nebraska and end up being the guy. I would have some concerns about, if you look at his career at LSU, I think there were, you know, 3, 4 or 5 seasons where they, you know, had two losses or less. Three of them were right when he took the job. There was really only one later when they played for the rematch with Alabama for that national title. So that it kind of ended on a slightly soft note relative to what Miles had done previously. That would be problematic for me. But he does sort of fit the Moose blueprint almost exactly. When you look at his last hire, you had an out-of-work coach who's kind of nationally beloved and a little bit eccentric in Mike Leach. That's who Moose Whitten got, proven winner. I think you could put Les Miles in all of those same categories as well. So I would think he would get some consideration.
Brandon Vogel's with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine at Brandon L. Vogel. From a frustration standpoint, do you think there's any communication that goes on coordinator to coordinator? Like, listen, man, I've got a new defense. We're working on it. Can we get some help? Because the cut I played before we went to break was, again, the three bullet points from last night. Not going to throw the players under the bus. Not going to air their family's dirty laundry. And I want to be honest, okay? Well, there was some honesty, a lot of honesty, in his comments about how that game finished, how it's an impossible ask to beat Northwestern when you give up three turnovers and you don't get some points in the red zone. Do you think there's some finger-pointing? What's your interpretation here with the offense v. the defense? Are they kind of folding their hands and turning their back on each other, or are they at least hugging it out a bit after a blow-up? Where are they at here relationship-wise, the Nebraska offense and defense together?
Yeah, that's the part I haven't really been able to figure out. You know, we've heard some common terms from Diaco over the season, and I honestly don't know exactly what he's talking about when he uses words like strain and friction. Is he talking about sort of having to go out and start a drive, you know, a defensive drive with the offense at the 40? Like, is that strain? I don't know. I don't think that there's any direct animosity there, certainly nothing that I've been able to pick up on, but I don't know either how great the communication is between them. And I think that kind of goes back to your top-down view of well who's calling the shots and who's making the decisions and who is saying this is how it needs to look, because it definitely does feel that Diaco, you know, he's such a strong personality, is kind of has his own sovereign nation over there with the defense. I don't know how much there it's removed from the rest of the team concept, but it doesn't feel fully integrated. I guess I'm comfortable enough saying that.
Vogue's about 30 seconds. What's coming up on HailVarsity.com?
Yeah, we'll be I'll be heading to Minnesota this weekend, so be looking at that game. We've had some great stuff up, particularly a story by Cody Nagel. Earlier on Nebraska's overtime woes, which everyone knows are bad, but were pretty shocking. Also looking forward to a story coming up soon. I don't know if we get up this week from Derek Peterson, who may have been doing some in-person research on potential coaching candidates. So I think that'll be pretty fun.
Like it. Vokes, thanks for the time, bud. Appreciate what you do. Great write-up with the Hot Reads, man.
All right, thanks a lot.
Take care. You might have noticed a different soybean sign in your neighbor's fields this year. That's right, it's AgriGold. Our customers now have access to select soybean varieties direct to their farm. The AgriGold way, with high expectations for every seed that goes into the ground. And our approach to soybeans no different. High-performance soybeans from the brand you already know. It's AgriGold. For more information, AgriGold.com. Some golf thoughts. Great coach. Tremendous dude, Mike Shewhart. Shuey up next with the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
It is that time, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Mike Shewhart is in, WildernessRidgeGolf.com. Membership benefits and pricing to look at. To see Chris Thompson, Director of Golf. And, of course, Shuey for Director of Instruction. You want that that putting game to work a little better, that approach shot to be like a lawn dart. or maybe you're just hurting off the tee box. Now, I got to tell you about this for the little ones out there. Mom and Dad need to know that Santa is making a stop at Wilderness Ridge. Breakfast, crafts, pictures with the Jolly Man himself. Can purchase your tickets. That includes a breakfast buffet, hot chocolate station, kids' crafts, a letter to Santa, and a 5x7 with Santa, reindeer food, and, of course, balloon creations. It's going to be December 17th, 9:30 to 2. All guests 4 years and under require a ticket and can log on wildernessridge.com and get the kids over to see Santa. We will refrain from playing Mike Leach's thoughts on Santa Claus this holiday season. Shuey, how are you?
I'm great. Another day.
Yeah?
Another exciting day.
Yeah, it is.
It's actually kind of golf weather out there today.
It is. The wind is minimal.
Yeah, it's not bad, huh?
What is it, 50 now? They finally crank 50, up to 50.
55, right in there. So it's not bad.
A little zip up.
Yeah.
Do it all right. So do you go, I got to ask you this, do you go stir crazy when it finally does get cold?
A little bit. This time's nice because this is kind of my downtime,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it gets me a little bit away from it, you know, and then, but it doesn't take too long, then I get a little stir crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, winter gets a little long sometimes.
Okay. Well, I want to, you got indoor practice facility, heated areas at Wilderness Ridge. You can find Shuey and he can help you with your game. I got to ask you here, I'm going to go down a couple of different directions. One, when it comes to shots. I'm going to ask Shuey to brag about Shuey here for a second. And what are some of the memorable shots, like big moment shots that you hit, situation time within a round that will always be in that back pocket of yours?
Well, probably the biggest one was the Tour Championship at Pumpkin Ridge out in Oregon. The hole before, so I was leading the tournament for most of the tournament, and I got to 17, and I actually hit a really good shot on 17, and I was just a little amped up, hit a little too far, hit it over the green, which is where you couldn't hit it, you know, an impossible up and down, and I didn't fare too well from there, so didn't hit a very good chip, hit another bad chip, this, so I make double, so now all of a sudden I'm
out of
not
lead.
In the lead,
mm-hmm.
and then I hit a great tee shot on 18, and I hit a 6-iron in there about 15 feet and rolled it in for birdie. So that 6-iron into the last hole, which was a really, really difficult shot. So I'll never forget, because my wife was caddying for me at the time, and I looked at her and I just said, there's no way we're going to lose this tournament, you know, because I'd played so good all week, and I had the lead all week, and I'm like, I'm not going to lose this tournament. And that was probably one of the best shots I've ever hit in my entire life.
What do you remember right before stepping up to hit that?
Just how focused I was and that I was going to hit it. I was just going to hit it great.
Were you just blank?
Not so much. I was just super hyper-focused on this is where I'm going to hit it, how I'm going to hit it. I could see it. I could feel it. And I hit it exactly like I pictured in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I hit it exactly how I wanted to, where I wanted to. It did exactly what I wanted it to. So, yeah, it was pretty cool. And I remember that very vividly, that there was no doubt in my mind I was going to hit that shot just like that. Partly because I had to, and I was really pissed, and I needed to. So
well,
it was
good.
Cool. That's one that will always stick out in my mind.
Okay. Any shot that you got praise from some of the other giants on tour? Or does that go on?
Oh, not much of that goes on. Good shot.
Yeah.
And let's say, man, that was a really good shot type of thing. Not a whole lot of, oh, wow, that's the most incredible shot I've ever seen or anything like that. But no, just very good camaraderie.
Okay.
You know? So I did to the LA Open. I got a lot of love from a little Japanese man that was in the gallery.
Okay.
So I hit it long and left, dead. You have no chance from over there. So trying to get it up and down. And I happened to get lucky and I hold it out.
Sure.
And this guy went nuts, man. He was high-fiving me, jumped up on me, and it was pretty funny.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What was his name?
So I don't remember his name. I don't think he spoke English, actually.
He was the president and member of the Shuey fan club.
Yeah, he was more excited about the shot than I was, so it was pretty fun.
Good.
Pretty cool.
Let's talk coaching etiquette here with golf, and what are your thoughts on how how does it work at the pro level when you have a swing coach, and how does it work at the college level between competing programs with coaches? You guys, I'll talk to football coaches, and they'll share tape. I remember stories about Nebraska when they made their switch to the 4-3 going down and learning from Bowden, touring what Florida State was doing, their type of defense. And is there any of that, for lack of a better term, copycat going on when it comes to either instruction or philosophy or just spending time with other peers?
Oh, yeah, no question. I mean, there's a lot of talk about techniques and things like that, because, you know, especially as the technology increases and gets better and better all the time, again, you're learning more and more about all of the different things and aspects. So there's some, but there's also the other side of it too, where it's like this teacher works with this instructor, and there's a lot of hush hush, you know, kind of
state secret.
Kind of, you know. It's like, really, what are you doing? There's not really a secret out there, you know. It's like, it's just that kind of goes on. This is my guy. This is who I work with, you know, and they're going to kind of stay to themselves doing what it is that they do. But, I mean, you get a little of that as well. But there's a lot of information out there that's going around, you know. And, again, golf is pretty unique. I mean, it's not different in a lot of sports, but there's not just one way and one opinion on how you do what it is you're trying to get done. There's a lot of different ways to do different things, you know. And it's like, obviously, if you are very committed and have a very strong belief about something, you're going to think it's right. So it's like, well, to me, there's no right. If there was one right way to do something, you would see every single player on tour swing the same way. You know, there are certain things that happen, but there are different ways that you go about doing it. So that's one of the key things in finding, as just from a normal golfer out there, it's like finding somebody that you can connect to. So if you are looking to go get lessons and want to take lessons, it's like, is there somebody that I really connect with that makes it make sense to them on how and what they're talking about? You know, because not everybody is good for everybody. You know, that's why you see even the best in the world change instructors all the time. You know, hearing it from a different person, a different voice, from a different direction, you know, sometimes it clicks to that player, and it's like, oh, it helps them understand what it is they're trying to get done. You know, it's like I've always said. I said, you know, who's the best teacher in the world? It's like, it could be my mom. Mm-hmm. If my mom elevates my play to the level I'm looking for, then my mom is the best teacher. Or it could be David Ledbetter or Butch Harmon. So it's like, it's what works for you.
Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf Segment. Shuey in studio. A little bit more time with the Wilderness Ridge Golf Segment. Brad Edwards, College Football Thoughts, 15 minutes away. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Few more minutes, Wilderness Ridge Golf Segment. Mike Shewhart, Shuey is in, wildernessridgegolf.com, also Husker Golf, and we'll get some college football thoughts from Brad Edwards regarding the Big Ten, the SEC, the ACC, Notre Dame, and the U hookup this weekend. 466-377-6800, 825-5865. Shuey, what's Tiger doing now as he gets kind of ready to come back here in December?
Wow, did you hear what the latest is on Tiger?
That's why I'm asking.
Man, he's better than ever. He's hitting it longer than he ever has. So it's like,
really?
He came out and said that. So it's like, wow, he's getting people excited. So it'll be interesting to see how he performs.
Do you think he would – is he selling here or is he believing?
I think he's doing a little bit of both. I think he's selling, trying to believe, you know. It's like, again, it's all about the same thing. It's like what you produce when you practice and on the range, yeah, and what you actually have to produce when it really counts. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's two different worlds when it comes to that, you know. And anytime you're away from that competitive environment, It's just not that easy to step right into it and be competitive, you know, because again, it's a different world. You can hit great shots on the range, but you got to hit great shots on the golf course, on the last hole to win a tournament. It's just way different, controlling your emotions and your mind and things like that. So it'll be fun. I'm really glad that he's back. I mean, he just does so much for golf, and he brings an amazing excitement. I mean, there'll be a lot of people watching to see what he does, you know, just the curiosity of where he's at. And then he makes statements like that, so then it's like it gets you a little bit more curious and excited about it.
Now, it'd be great if someone was there with a microphone asking him about his health.
Yeah.
He doesn't want it. Mm-hmm. No way does he want that. But
no. And he's going to tell him
what
good.
What can he seriously ramp up between now and December? I mean, what can get done? How finely tuned can a guy be?
You can get as finely tuned as practice allows you to get.
Until it's go time.
Until it's go time. And then it's like you got one shot to hit this, and you got to hit it there, and you can't hit it over there. So it's like you don't – it's just a different world. And until you do that enough times and prove to yourself that that's happening in that situation, you know, building the trust and the confidence and things like that, that it takes to be super competitive. But again, Tiger's a rare animal, man. I would not put anything past him, you know. But it's just, I mean, he's been away for so long. He's had so many injuries. You know, you can say you're as healthy as you've ever been, but what does that really mean? There's no way you can be like you were. I mean, you've had, I don't know, six, seven.
More than that, right?
Different surgeries on all parts of your body, so you're not the same. You can't be. Your body's not the same. So I hope he does really well, you know, and because he, again, he's an amazing talent in what he was capable of doing, and he even get remotely close to that again, you know, because he does. He brings a lot to golf. He means a lot to golf, and he brings a massive, you know, amazing amount of excitement to golf when he's doing what he's capable of doing, you know.
Mike Shewhart is in studio, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment, and can log on wildernessridgegolf.com. Get a tee time fired up while it's still golfable outside. Go see Shuey for some of that treatment and direction you need to get that game where you want to go, and he'll do it for you. wildernessridgegolf.com. A quick timeout, 10 minutes away. We will run down Brad Edwards after SportsCenter. ESPN Insider College Game Day, his thoughts on another monster weekend of college football. And we'll get his take on where the Big Ten sits with perfection. And if that's a reality that needs to happen for Wisconsin or the league. Hour two of Hail Varsity on the way.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Hour two, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the Pride of Chicago, Danny Burke, Mike Shewhart, Husker Golf, Wilderness Ridge Golf, hanging out. We welcome in College Football Insider, part of College Football Game Day at ESPN.com. Brad Edwards with us, at J. Brad Edwards. Brad, how are you, sir? What's good?
What's good? Not the weather around here, but I'm heading down to Auburn on Friday for what should be a fun game there. So I guess that's what's good. Get to see some good football.
You absolutely will, and Nebraska fans wanting some good football to return. A tough overtime loss to Northwestern. Northwestern has put quite a few good runs together, including back-to-back wins before heading to Lincoln over Iowa and Michigan State, and those were the two stories from the past weekend. And I want to start there in the Big Ten, Brad. Your reaction, was there any part of your mind that said this could be a tough one for Ohio State going to Kinnick going into last weekend?
Not in the least. And I'm well aware of Iowa's history with top five teams coming in there and how well they played in those games. Obviously, you know, came as close as you can to beating Penn State without actually winning the game earlier this season. But Ohio State, you know, I mean, sure, some people might have said, hey, letdown's possible after an emotional comeback win in a big game like that the week before. But But I just didn't see it coming. I felt like Ohio State had probably flipped the switch several weeks ago, the same way they did back in that 2014 season, and that we were just looking at a different Buckeyes team. And that if not for some mistakes that they had made against Penn State, would have won that game pretty easily. And so I didn't think that, especially with it not being a night game, just being an afternoon game, I thought that Ohio State would just kind of cruise in there. It didn't shock me that they kind of, went back and forth a little bit in the first half. But I figured by the end of the first half, Ohio State would have the lead and then would pull away in the second. And obviously that's not the way that it turned out.
It didn't, and the rest of the Big Ten may not like Iowa, but I can imagine Big Ten fan kind of cheers in old Ferentz with the score that was put up on Ohio State. Penn State looked invincible 3 weeks ago. They lose to Sparty. Weather delay kind of helps shift that thing around, and Michigan State went and took it. And when you look at the Big Ten right now, Brad, what is your takeaway of the conference? Balanced, and there's not a week off? Or do you look at it as, look, your best hope is Wisconsin, and that's not impressive? How are you kind of defining Big Ten football right now when it comes to their place in the rest of college football? What do you think of the league?
Well, as much as I want to believe that Ohio State has a really talented team and personnel-wise is as good as anyone in the country, their play just does not support the idea that they're a great team. And so I'm kind of left to believe that the Big Ten, hold your breath when I say this, but I'm left to believe the Big Ten is very similar to the Pac-12. Okay. And that they're a bunch of good teams, but not a great team anywhere. And I think that's why the Big Ten's now one Wisconsin loss away from being in the situation that we felt like the Pac-12 was in a few weeks ago, which is that they're probably going to be on the outside looking in when it comes to the playoff. And I would not have seen that coming before the season. Although it is crazy to think, and I guess this kind of speaks to my thought that there are a bunch of good teams but no great teams, that the Big Ten has six teams ranked in the playoff standings, and yet Michigan is 7-2, and they're not even one of them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it tells you that there's some good depth there atop the conference. There's just not that team that's having an excellent season, aside from Wisconsin, which maybe hasn't looked excellent week in and week out, but they have the zero in the loss column. And for now, that means a lot. We'll see if it ultimately is enough if they get to the end of the season without losing.
A two-loss conference champ. Can that happen when it comes to being included in the 4-team playoff?
Absolutely. Yeah, and especially I think when we're in a scenario like this where, like I said, you get a Wisconsin loss anywhere. I mean, whether it's to Iowa this week, Michigan next week, Big Ten championship game, one more loss by Wisconsin, and, they'd still be in the Big Ten championship game.
Right.
So I guess the better way to say it is if the East representative wins the Big Ten title game, and I think that team, if it's Ohio State, will be favored,
mm-hmm.
You're going to have a two-loss champion in the Big Ten. If USC, which is looking as good as anybody in the Pac-12, if they win that conference title game, you've got a two-loss champ in that league. And I think if Auburn were to beat Georgia this weekend, and then turn around 2 weeks later and beat Alabama. Now, both of those games are at Auburn. And then they can come back a week later and beat Georgia a second time in the SEC championship game. It's a tall order. But if they can do it, I think Auburn is not only the SEC champion with two losses, that's obvious, but I think they get in the playoff. Because unless Wisconsin's able to win out, I do think Wisconsin with no losses is an easy choice above a two-loss Auburn, but anyone other than that coming out of the Big Ten, I think a two-loss Auburn goes ahead of them, and I think that anyone other than a one-loss Washington out of the Pac-12, and maybe even if that happens, Auburn goes ahead of them. And so it is an interesting setup right here. We do have, I think, for the first time in this playoff era, a I guess, a situation where you would look at with 3 weeks to go, actually 4 weeks, you include the conference championship games, still 4 weeks to go, and you could look at a two-loss team and say, you know what, they might actually control their destiny. I know we've had two-loss teams that you could say, okay, if this happens and this happens and this happens, they could get in, but I don't think Auburn needs a ton of help. The hardest part is what they have to do themselves.
Yeah, they're scheduled down the stretch, and then you tack on the SEC title game. But at least those two games we're talking about are at home. Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider, College Game Day with us, Hail Varsity Radio. What are your thoughts here with Miami and Clemson? I know that Florida State and Clemson hook up this weekend. I know the U and Notre Dame play. You've got a lot of elimination games this weekend, and it seems like they keep getting stacked. You have an elimination game in the Big Ten East with Ohio State and Sparty. You have Miami that's unbeaten. You have Notre Dame with that one narrow point loss to Georgia. But Notre Dame's there. Clemson had a bad loss at Syracuse, but they'll likely see the U in the ACC title game. Who do you think is able to survive this weekend? Do you think Georgia survives? Do you think Miami survives? Does Notre Dame get it done? How you kind of feeling out this weekend before you head down to the Plains?
Yeah, I like Notre Dame. You know, Miami, as much of a step forward as that was for them last Saturday night to play probably their best game of the season and knock off Virginia Tech, Virginia Tech is still not a team that's in the category with Notre Dame and then Clemson, who Miami would probably have to play in the ACC championship game. So I guess I look at Miami and I say, you know what, it was a good performance by them, but I think they'll have to play even better than that to beat Notre Dame or to beat Clemson. And so the question is, does Miami have another notch that they're capable of taking it up? I don't know if they do. Nice performance by them, but I still have a hard time picking them to beat Notre Dame because I think they would have to play even better than they did last Saturday. Georgia-Auburn is a tough one because I think Auburn's defense is good enough that they can slow down Georgia's running game and make Jake Fromm have to beat them throwing the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not throwing it all game, but he'll have to make more plays than he's used to having to make. And that could be a difference maker there. And that game to me feels like a complete toss-up, and I think Vegas feels the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one other game out there, you asked about Big Ten. Look, I have a hard time picking Sparty. As many times as I've seen them do it when everyone's doubting them, I just think Ohio State is so much more talented than they are that if the Buckeyes have their head screwed on, this is a game they should win comfortably. But will I be surprised if they, you know, aren't ready to play? No, I've seen it too many times. But the other one is in the Big 12 with TCU going to Oklahoma. It's the last two teams with fewer than two losses in the Big 12 playing each other. Now, there's a possibility they could rematch in the conference championship game. And this one I think is interesting just because TCU statistically is the best defense in the Big 12. And so after what we saw last week in Bedlam, you know, you kind of have that belief that, okay, Oklahoma is just going to march up and down the field on anyone because they're all Big 12 defenses. Well, TCU is only a Big 12 defense by conference designation. I think they're better than everybody else in that league on that side of the ball. And so I'm really looking forward, even in Norman, to seeing how much they can slow down Oklahoma's offense and whether they could pull an upset that would shake things up. But you're right, Chris. Like there are a number of games this weekend that are going to change a lot of these what-ifs we've been playing all week, all these scenarios. Okay, if you have this and this and this, half of those are going to get blown up with the results this Saturday, and then we'll have to come up with new ones.
Well, I mean, it'll absolutely shake itself out. I mean, this thing will be set to go. You'll have four that I think most can agree on here post-conference championship weekend. You'll have, and the way the schedules have been set up, I mean, it's pretty tasty. I mean, you've got part one of OU Texas, like, or OU TCU likely. You have a chance to see Auburn do their work the last couple weeks of the year, right? I mean, they hit a couple speed bumps, but they've been pretty good. Clemson will have a chance to keep control of the ACC, and then Notre Dame still has Stanford looming after they get done with Miami. How dangerous is this trip? I've got about 3 minutes here, Brad. How dangerous is this trip for Bama to Starkville?
You know, I think it could be. I mean, I'm certainly not going to pick Mississippi State, but I think Bama's about a 2-touchdown favorite last I saw, and that feels like too much to me because of Alabama's injuries. I'm not sure how much you're dialed into those up there, but Alabama in the season opener against Florida State lost a bunch of linebackers, but two of them were lost for the season, two outside linebackers. And then last week against LSU, they had two inside linebackers lost for the season. And a lot of people have a tendency to say, oh, you know, it's Alabama. They got all these 4- and 5-star guys. Just plug the next one in. Well, Alabama has 85 scholarships like everybody else. And so they only have so many linebackers on a roster. And when you lose four of them, now they're playing guys who there's one who was originally a walk-on who's out there. They have, I think, a couple of true freshmen who are going to be in there. And going back to week three against Colorado State, when they had four linebackers out for that game, Colorado State put together a nice game plan where they made a lot of throws to the tight ends and the running backs who were matched up on those linebackers who didn't have as much experience. And they had a lot of success with that. And I think that's what you're going to see from Mississippi State. You're going to see it from Auburn when Alabama goes down there. And if they get to the SEC championship game, you'll see it again from Georgia. Everyone's going to scheme to try to take advantage of these linebackers that while they'll look the part, I can promise you that. In their uniforms, they're going to look the same as all the other Alabama linebackers, but they haven't played. And so they can be picked on, and you can get them out of position because they just don't have that experience. And I would be really surprised if Alabama's defense looks as dominant over the final three games as it did over the first nine.
A thought here about 90 seconds, Brad. Dan Mullen, what's your guess on him? Is he happy there? Is he shopping? And what's his long-term career aspiration?
I mean, he's been there for a while.
I know.
And he is he's originally from New Hampshire, so he's not a Southern guy. He doesn't have any connections there to make it, you know, kind of a destination thing. I don't think he hates it. But like I said, he's been there for a while, and I think he recognizes, you know, it is what it is. I mean, he's not – I mean, look, he caught lightning in a bottle with Dak Prescott and got to number one in the polls for a few weeks, and that was fantastic. But that's really as good as it's going to get for Mississippi State. The odds of making the playoff are really slim. And so if his aspirations are beyond that, I think this is when he moves. This is going to be a good opportunity for him, or I think there'll be a few suitors at bigger programs. And I would be really surprised if he doesn't, you know, take advantage of that and go somewhere. I don't know if he'll stay in the SEC, but I would. Now, here's the one catch to this, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
He's making $4.5 million, okay? So, I mean, he's not
going to buy a lot of golf balls.
Yeah, and especially living in Starkville, Mississippi. So I don't know that it's going to be about the money. I don't know that someone's going to have to offer him a lot more money to leave, but you'll have to offer him at least 4.5, if not 5 to 6, because 4.5 goes further in Starkville than it does most places. So, but it's not about the bump in pay. It's about the increased opportunity to really do something special on a national stage.
Brad Edwards. Brad, we'll be catching up with you this weekend down Auburn, Georgia. Thanks for a few minutes today. Great to catch up.
All right. Always enjoy it. Thanks.
Take care. Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider, College Game Day. You'll hear him getting ready for Georgia and Auburn. That'll be big time. So many awesome games this weekend in college football. Georgia, Auburn, Iowa, Wisconsin. You have Bama at Mississippi State, TCU, Oklahoma, Notre Dame and Miami. Catholics versus the Convicts was on last night when I got back from Nebraska basketball. Caught the tail end of Ric Flair. I got to see that 30 for 30. Saw the last 20 minutes. That was heartbreaking. We'll have more on Diaco and what do you believe when it comes to the mandate on style of tackling. Hail Varsity continues.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, Chris at HailVarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Open segment for you, 466-377-6800-825-5865 can tap the line. Shillingbridge Cork and Tap House quoting Coach Banker today. He's full of it. He's making excuses. It was not mandated by the administration, not to my knowledge. it was suggested and then it was put forward by our head coach to bring that company in and that method be used. Cut seven here. The mandate, I feel like this is Seinfeld. The mandate. I can see a Seinfeld episode being titled that. And what do you believe? Do you care anymore as a Nebraska fan with this? He said, he said. And is there a part of you that sides with Diaco, understands a little bit about where he's coming from with the expectations and the need to have the 09 defense, that level of defense in day one lockstep? Or your expectations, look, man, you're supposed to be better than this. Or does it go beyond your head coach or beyond your coordinator to your head coach? To me, it goes beyond the head coach. It goes back to previous folks in charge being a nightmare of decision makers. Here's Coach D.
I'll give you one example, and I don't know. I'm just trying to be honest here. So, and sometimes you hear this story secondhand because I wasn't here. And that's part of talking about 2016. Like I mentioned, when I found this group, right, my understanding is that this is just one thing, right? So I can say more than one thing. How many is, it's not important for this venue, but this is one thing. Mandated to the defensive staff, whether this is true or not, I have no idea. This is just what was told to me. Mandated to the defensive staff was a tackling fundamental teaching progression that they were going to tackle that way, mandated from the administration, which didn't sound like anybody really believed in. So the tackling degenerated.
It got worse. And look at me. I'm so great. I came in and, well, it's not fixed. But look what I walked into. It's what's being spun right now. More from Diaco here about bad tackling.
You think about a player showing up here who's a really great tackler and then becomes a worse tackler? Like, that doesn't make any sense. So I had no idea till we went to our tackling drill on the first full padded practice of spring football and found that the players were spectacularly frustrated during the drill because they're willing, they're talented enough to tackle, they're tough enough to tackle, they're willing tacklers, they want to do well, but they don't fundamentally know anymore how to tackle at all. So we've been working hard on just that one thing. It's been present in every single day in every practice.
Okay. Thank you. Now, Diaco has asked, is that what happened in overtime? Bad tackling.
Listen, I think the tackling is coming on. I think the tackling is coming on. So we've worked hard at tackling is my point. And you're going to work at tackling, but this has been an overemphasis, one that I didn't, me personally, anticipate having to make at the level that we've had to make it.
See? It's all about me doing a great job. Believe me. Please. No. My bad. We'll get better. Hang in there. Next question. That's it. Now, it's when in doubt, either accept and be accountable or blame a European sport that uses their foot.
I really wasn't here, so I don't know what was taught.
That's what you had to break the habit of?
I'm not sure even what it was supposed to look like.
What's the difference? Is night and day between what they were doing and what you're trying to do?
Because I'm not sure they were pulling off even what they were. I just don't know what. I just know when I went to that drill, to say alarming would be an understatement. And I'm not, and it was even, I could feel it on the players. Like my heart went out to them. Like they were so incredibly frustrated in that moment in the spring. And since then, they've come light years in being, you know, and becoming functional tacklers. So we just keep working on these areas. I'm not going to say what all the areas are. 'Cause like I said, I'm not a, I'm not an air out the family business, but I can say this. I know all the areas defensively. I can see all the gaps that need to be closed and eliminated. Excited to go to work doing that for the players to create the kind of defense for them and all the Cornhuskers out there so that it looks the way it should look. And that you can go to the game and stone the opponent, and if it's hold them to a field goal and you win 3-0, then that's how you win the game. I love that.
Thank you. You love that. 3-0. Let's talk a little bit here about Bill Moose and Bob Diaco. They had not had a discussion or conversation yet. Maybe that has changed after last night's 25 minutes and change. But, you know, maybe it is time for Bill Moose to sit down with Coach Diaco and be part of that that intervention we talked about in hour one.
I have not had an opportunity to talk to Mr. Moose, but I would say that from everything that I've seen, it looks to me like they hired a man that understands deeply not only the athletic department, but we're talking specifically about football, sees it as a player, understands it as a player and a coach, understands it as a player, coach, and administrator, and can see the common denominators that have been present over the last dozen years or however long. I'm not a historian of Nebraska football, but I do know that there has been some changes. I know all the guys now, you know. Like, I know Bo. I consider him a friend, and I think he's an awesome coach. And now I got a chance to be with Coach Riley. And he's a great coach. He's got more championship trophies than he has shelf to put his stuff on. And a great guy. And you also couldn't have two different people. Like, they're completely different. Completely different. Beautiful in their own way. And both awesome coaches. And I know them both now intimately. And awesome coaches. Completely different. Is the product similar? I don't know. You would know better than I. If it is, does that make any sense?
No. More from Diaco. The underlying theme from last night, a reminder. He just got here.
I feel like that. You know, I feel like that. I definitely feel like that. And I'm excited to do this work. I don't want to be anywhere else. I love this place. I love the players. I love the people. I love the university. I love how important football is to everyone. I love that, even though sometimes it feels a little attacking. I wouldn't have it any other way, personally. And like I said, I never want to be anywhere else doing anything other than trying to win championships here and play great defense.
Bob Diaco, as the world turns. And a reminder, it's still impossible to ask this defense to be great.
You think about this season, 12 points separate 4-5 from 7-2. And not that 7-2 is acceptable, but 12 points total. Not 12 points in a game, 12 points total. So you're looking for those points, and we are too. And like I said, the games, the way that they're conducted, the external stuff that surrounds the program, the gaps that are present for each particular person on defense, and I'm only talking about the defense, in that game, conducted that way, becomes very hard.
Turnovers, short fields, points off turnovers, tackling. It has been a draining last 2 years, if you're a Nebraska football fan. It's been a draining last several years for a lot of the Nebraska fans across the state. And what you have right now is to ask yourself this, and I'm going to go us versus them here. If you had to circle what the issue is, and if you're pro Diaco or not, is it the offense that's a problem or the defense that's a problem? Because they're two different countries. The only thing missing's, you know, East and West Berlin here with the wall. Because the way I read into is the defense has been asked to do a lot, be great early and often. despite the transition and change. Maybe they weren't asked. They've just had to be because the offense has sputtered so much. I mean, it is a monster domino effect going on with this team. And we haven't spent a second on Minnesota this week because who cares? It's Minnesota. It's Row the Boat Guy. Yay. They're 4-5 as well. Your interest and excitement for a bowl game is, I guess, okay because you do cheer for and care about the seniors on this team if you're a fan. Other than that, let's go to Shreveport, high five, or whatever. It's better than, I don't know, it's better than staying home, I guess. But you got to take 2 or 3 down, and that's not even topic of conversation. It's let me defend myself to what I said earlier. When it comes to the game, do we have time for this? I think we have time for this. Northwestern, right? Did you get to review what ailed you last Saturday in overtime?
Again, disappointing in the conversation of you have the call in the system to stop what's happening, but it creates strain and stress in another area. So that play should have never happened. That shot down the field, that was a bad play. Should have been easily fit. But again, it's just you need more. A little bit more aptitude there, a little bit more depth of understanding, a little bit better clean eye progression, you know, which just takes time. Like I pointed out, we have new players doing new things, even some veteran players like Joshua doing a new job. You know, he's been a corner for 3 or 4 years, and now he's trying to learn how to play safety, banged up, chipped up, just trying to give it all out there for his brothers. So there's a lack of depth of understanding right now. He's going to be a darn good player in the future. At that position.
Why'd you move him? More speed on the field in the secondary. Get it. I know Kalu's fast. You still moved him. You put a true sophomore at corner that has had a lot of growing pains. You moved him. Or you were told to move him. I don't know. A jock doc on the way. If you're a Teddy Bridgewater fan or Viking fan, you want to check this out. It's been cleared, been activated. A long road for Sir Teddy. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Time for a jock doc Wednesday. Lincoln Orthopedic Center, Dr. Brandon Seifert with us. Dr. Brandon, how are you?
Hey, I'm great, Chris. How are you doing?
Doing okay. How's the fantasy team doing?
Yeah, it could be better. It could be a lot better. How's yours?
Yeah, I've won quite a few in a row. I'm going to brag for a minute. I'm happy about that. Yeah, somehow I started out 0-4. I blame my kid for that one, his decision-making. But let's switch gears from how bad or good we are in fantasy to a reality, that reality being Teddy Bridgewater. In his battle, man, to get back, good chance he'll be activated this week. And let's remind folks, Dr. Brandon, what he went through. He about lost his leg, correct?
Yeah, you know, just a reminder on, you know, what Teddy Bridgewater went through. So obviously, great quarterback, doing well, starting for the Vikings. And then essentially in preseason camp a year ago, so we're talking back in 2016, Bridgewater ends up having a knee dislocation. Again, the key difference there is, you know, you can dislocate your kneecap. That'd be a patella. But he actually had a knee dislocation where the entire knee joint actually dislocated. And so the key factor with that is, okay, so you dislocate your knee, and what does that mean? What has happened? Well, in order for that to happen, basically the tibia, which is the shin, and the femur is the thigh bone. They basically kind of shift way out of place in opposite directions of each other. In order to do that, you have to essentially tear almost all of the ligaments inside of your knee. And that's what he had. I don't remember exactly which all the ones he tore. Usually you're going to get about 3 of those, usually your ACL, your PCL, and then one of the collaterals, if not both. And sometimes you'll even dislocate your kneecap on top of that. And I think he actually did dislocate his kneecap as well, in addition to the total knee. So that's what he had. Obviously a devastating injury, very, very difficult to even get back to playing sports after an injury like that, especially at the level of the NFL. When you look at a recovery time from that, you know, most folks are aware of, well, with an ACL, you're back in 4 to 6 months, sometimes 6 or 8 months. This is definitely, you know, over a year kind of process to get back, and it truly has been for him. But now he's to the point where, you know, he's running, jumping, jogging around, and sounds like in all intents and purposes doing very well despite having that injury. And so now fast forward to where we are now, you know, what's he going to be like as a quarterback? You know, it's kind of the big question for him.
Dr. Brandon Seifer with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking the return of Teddy Bridgewater, a knee dislocation. It was vicious. It was gruesome, and he's kept after it. Let's spend a minute here on the rehab process, what he went through, and how he was able to recover.
So, you know, from a, you know, obviously the surgery side, you know, the multiple ligaments that need to be reconstructed from a surgery perspective, and then obviously you really have to get after physical therapy. They probably slowed him down some, at least at the beginning, just because of all the work they had to do. It's not a, you know, a standard, you know, one ligament recovery kind of deal. But essentially, you know, this is going to involve a kind of a slow process to maybe start some initial weight bearing. Maybe they made him non-weight bearing for a couple of weeks after surgery, start into a gentle range of motion program. Probably was in a brace for 6 to 10 weeks, at least initially postoperatively. Then they just keep progressing it. You know, he's probably somebody they didn't really let maybe even jog for 4 or 5 months. Typically with an ACL, they're jogging by, you know, 9 to 10 weeks. After that, you know, it's just a ton of kind of strengthening work. The other thing that's a big factor with these is, you know, you start adding on all these extra injuries, the knee dislocation, the multiple ligaments, the patella dislocation. All of that creates, you know, just a ton of scar tissue. And so your therapy is really focused on, you know, trying to kind of beat back that stiffness. And stiffness usually ends up being more of a bigger issue with these than instability does. And so that is probably a big battle that he went through, was working on regaining his motion, and that was probably the majority of his PT, at least in the first couple of months. Then from there on, you start to redevelop all those muscles. Obviously, there's some, you know, comorbidities associated with the surgery because you have to borrow, you know, other parts of your body, other tendons to try to reconstruct these ligaments. And so trying to get those to heal, trying to make up for the lack of not having those now also is a big part of your rehab. And so it becomes kind of a muscular strengthening issue. And then ultimately, where I think athletes really struggle with these kind of nasty multi-ligamentous knee injuries is the confidence factor. You know, feeling like you can get out there and cut and jump and take a hit. Those are really difficult things to try to, you know, get back into your mind and kind of redevelop the confidence.
Confidence so key, and if you're injured, you're afraid of getting injured again, or will it be stable? Will you be able to do what you're used to doing? And Teddy's just so mentally tough. Teddy Bridgewater, we're talking about his knee dislocation. He'll be active. It activated this week. Another Jock Doc Wednesday with Dr. Brandon Seifert, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. When it comes to mechanics with him throwing the football and just planting and being in the pocket and the natural motion you have of throwing, is there going to be any lingering effects from this procedure and the recovery of it? Is it always going to be sore? Will it take speed off? Will it take away some of that ability to plant? Will he have to retrain the muscle memory? It's been forever. I would assume that he's taken a 3, 5, or 7 step drop, let alone a shotgun snap.
Yeah, absolutely. All great questions for sure. You know, just starting kind of basic stuff. You know, so if you're a coach here, an athletic trainer, just trying to put this gentleman back into the game, you know, you want to start out with the simple stuff. So, you know, your little 3-step drops, you know, being back in shotgun, a little 3-step, couple step drop off the shotgun is probably where you start him. But I would think that would be something he should do fairly well. I think the 3-step or the deeper drops will work okay for him. I think what he'll run into trouble is, you know, trying to utilize some of his previous mobility. You know, sure, the speed's going to be down. He probably won't ever reach that kind of same speed. Obviously, the agility is going to be down. I don't think he'll probably be able to cut as well as he used to. Those are huge factors for him because in some ways he is, you know, a pretty impressive athlete that can run on the field a little bit and stretch the field a little bit. So he's probably going to be more of a drop-back passer kind of guy. And I think in that role, I think he'll do pretty well if, you know, obviously his line protects him. But outside of that, I think he'll struggle. I think that'll be an area where you'll see him different. The other question is, you know, what kind of, you know, velocity is he going to be able to generate through his hips that's, traveling through his knee? Can he plant really well and really throw the ball well? That might be something that's a little bit different for him too. You know, he might become more of a kind of more of a shoulder arm thrower type as opposed to really kind of rotating through your hips. That might be an issue that he might struggle with for a while. It could be permanent for him. Those are kind of some of the challenges he'll look at, you know, getting back on the football field. When you look at him on a day-to-day basis as a, you know, a normal human being, obviously pain's going to be part of it. You know, he's going to be achy. He's going to, you know, definitely an injury like this really sets you up to have some early arthritis. Clearly, he's not going to have a very great-looking knee probably 5-10 years down the road from now. Maybe it already is not looking that great because most likely with this injury, you really do injure your cartilage as well on top of the ligamentous injury stuff. So that's going to be a, you know, a big factor for him, just dealing with some of the discomfort, finding maybe an appropriate you know, anti-inflammatory regimen, which clearly is going to have to be probably part of his return process. And the other thing is, you know, what about other surgery for him? You know, there's, you know, a good possibility that some scar tissue can set up here. There's good chance that he may, you know, tweak something else along the way. And so he's probably looking at a couple more scope procedures perhaps down the road to take care of some of that stuff that pops up.
Dr. Brandon Seifert, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Teddy Bridgewater. He'll be activated by the Vikings in his road to recovery. Incredible story for Bridgewater to come back. Dr. Brandon detailing that all he had to go through to make it back. Dr. Brandon, we'll catch up again next week. Great stuff. Thanks for the time.
Sounds great, Chris. You guys take care.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time on a Wednesday. Jerry DiNardo, Gary Barnett tomorrow, Sauter Heyman right now. 0% interest financing through 2020. Check out their extensive collection of earth, mined, and pure-grown diamonds. And 1 carat diamonds available, just $99 down, $99 a month is what you can get locked into. And take care of her for this holiday season. Get a head start, 0% interest financing through 2020, and check out the extensive collection of both earth, mined, and pure-grown diamonds. 1 carat diamonds available, $99 down, $99 a month. 12th and O downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion, Lincoln, or out west in Grand Island. Let's squeeze in one more call. Welcome in John to Hail Varsity Radio. John. Chill out. Back up. Start slowly. Go ahead.
Okay. I was at a meeting today, and I heard of a coach about 10 minutes ago in the South named Norvell. Have you heard of him?
He's at Memphis.
Yeah, right. And
great barbecue in Memphis.
This friend of mine is, you know, good friends with the Mannings and was telling me, you know, about this coach and how much everybody thinks about him, and they know him personally, and they were just hoping that nobody comes down and snags him. I mean, what do you think of
what I think of him? I think of Norvell. I think Memphis is pretty good. They've been in the top 25. Scott Frost's team smoked them, and I think somebody from the SEC will probably take a look at him as a third or fourth choice.
Okay, I just didn't know, you know, I just heard that, just came out of a meeting, and thanks a lot. You have a good evening.
Take care, John. All right. He was just in there, just ready to, like a racehorse out of the gate, he heard the bell. I mean, I had to dial him back a little bit. Well, listen, this is Diaco out of context. Enjoy. It's an attempt to be funny. I'll keep attempting.
I felt the reverb back. I mean, after the game, as I said, and I think there was, I don't consume it, but stoned. Again, disappointing in the conversation of you have the call in the system, stoned. And the last drive's evidence of it. So, as I said, you mentioned the run. You asked about the run. Stoned. You think about this season, 12 points separate 4 and 5 from 7 and 2. Stoned. Obviously, it's been a focus. Stoned. You think about a player showing up here who's a really great tackler and then becomes a worse tackler? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Stoned. We have a situation. Stoned. And then there's this developmental process. They're stoned. So again, this might get cryptic. I apologize. Stoned. We are going to create a great defense here. Stoned. And I think that the new athletic director will be able to see the common denominators. Stoned. I feel like that. You know, I feel like that. Stoned. And now I got a chance to be with Coach Riley. And he's a great coach. He's got more championship trophies than he has shelf to put his stuff on. Stoned. Obviously, it's been a focus. I don't say that in a disparaging way. We're stoned. You know, like I know Bo. Thank you.
Have a good night. Diaco out of context. Enjoy your evening. Coach Barnett, Coach DiNardo tomorrow with Hail Varsity Radio. Eventually, we'll get you qualified here, get that cranked back up probably next week for Iowa tickets, Blur Party Passes. Enjoy your evening. Thanks for your time. Thanks for tuning in to Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.